This text was produced by Les Bowler, St. Ives, Dorset. The Hand of Ethelberta, a Comedy in Chapters, by Thomas Hardy. Preface: This somewhat frivolous narrative was produced as an interlude between stories of a more sober design, and it was given the subtitle of a comedy to indicate, though not quite accurately, the aim of the performance. A high degree of probability was not attempted in the arrangement of the incidents, and there was expected of the reader a certain lightness of mood, which should inform him with a good-natured willingness to accept the production in the spirit in which it was offered. The characters themselves, however, were meant to be consistent and human. On its first appearance, the novel suffered, perhaps deservedly, for what was involved in these intentions, for its quality of unexpectedness in particular, that unforgivable sin in the critics' sight, the immediate precursor of Ethelberta having been a purely rural tale. Moreover, in its choice of medium and line of perspective, it undertook a delicate task. To excite interest in a drama, if such a dignified word may be used in the connection wherein servants were as important as, or more important than, their masters, wherein the drawing room was sketched in many cases from the point of view of the servants' hall, such a reversal of the social foreground has, perhaps, since grown more welcome, and readers even of the finer crusted kind may now be disposed to pardon a writer for presenting the sons and daughters of Mr. and Mrs. Chickerell as beings who come within the scope of a congenial regard. Th, December 1895. Contents. 1. A street in Anglebury, a heath near it, inside the Red Lion Inn. 2. Christopher's House, Sandburn Town, Sandburn Moor. 3. Sandburn Moor, continued. 4. Sandburn Pier Road to Windway Ballroom and Windway House. 5. At the window the road home. 6. The shore by Windway. 7. The dining room of a townhouse, the butler's pantry. 8. Christopher's lodgings, the grounds about Rookington. 9. A lady's drawing rooms, Ethelberta's dressing room. 10. Lady Peterwin's house. 11. Sandburn and its neighborhood, some London streets. 12. Arrowthorne Park and Lodge. 13. The Lodge, continued, the copse behind. 14. A turnpike road. 15. An inner room at the Lodge. 16. A large public hall. 17. Ethelberta's house. 18. Near Sandburn, London streets, Ethelberta's. 19. Ethelberta's drawing room. 20. The neighborhood of the hall, the road home. 21. A street, Nay's rooms, Christopher's rooms. 22. Ethelberta's house. 23. Ethelberta's house, continued. 24. Ethelberta's house, continued, the British Museum. 25. The Royal Academy, the Farmfield Estate. 26. Ethelberta's drawing room. 27. Mrs. Belmain's Cripplegate Church. 28. Ethelberta's Mr. Chickerell's room. 29. Ethelberta's dressing room, Mr. Doncastle's house. 30. On the housetop. 31. Nulcia, a lofty down a ruined castle. 32. A room in Engworth Court. 33. The English Channel, Normandy. 34. The Hotel Beausejour, and spots near it. 35. The hotel, continued, and the quay in front. 36. The house in town. 37. Nulcia, an ornamental villa. 38. Engworth Court. 39. Nulcia, Melchester. 40. Melchester, continued. 41. Workshops and in the street. 42. The Doncastles' residence, and outside the same. 43. The railway, the sea, the shore beyond. 44. Sandburn, the lonely heath, the Red Lion, the highway. 45. Nulcia, the road thence. Engworth. 46. Engworth, continued, the Anglebury Highway. 47. Engworth and its precincts. Melchester, sequel. Anglebury, Engworth, Sandburn, the Hand of Ethelberta. 1. A street in Anglebury, a heath near it, inside the Red Lion Inn, young Mrs. Peterwin stepped from the door of an old and well-appointed inn in a Wessex town to take a country walk. By her look and carriage she appeared to belong to that gentle order of society which has no worldly sorrow except when its jewelry gets stolen. But, as a fact not generally known, her claim to distinction was rather one of brains than of blood. She was the daughter of a gentleman who lived in a large house not his own, and began life as a baby christened Ethelberta after an infant of title who does not come into the story at all, having merely furnished Ethelberta's mother with a subject of contemplation. She became teacher in a school, was praised by examiners, admired by gentlemen, not admired by gentlewomen, was touched up with accomplishments by masters who were coaxed into painstaking by her many graces, and, entering a mansion as governess to the daughter thereof, was stealthily married by the son. He, a minor like herself, died from a chill caught during the wedding tour, and a few weeks later was followed into the grave by Sir Ralph Peterwin, his unforgiving father, who had bequeathed his wealth to his wife absolutely. These calamities were a sufficient reason to Lady Peterwin for pardoning all concerned. She took by the hand the forlorn Ethelberta, who seemed rather a detached bride than a widow, and finished her education by placing her for 2 or 3 years in a boarding school at Bonn. Latterly, as he had brought the girl to England to live under her roof as daughter and companion, the condition attached being that Ethelberta was never openly to recognize her relations, for reasons which will hereafter appear. The elegant young lady, as she had a full right to be called, if she cared for the definition, arrested all the local attention, when she emerged into the summer evening light with that diadem and scepter bearing many people for reasons of heredity discovering such graces only in those whose vestibules are lined with ancestral mail, forgetting that a bear may be taught to dance. While this air of hers lasted, even the inanimate objects in the street appeared to know that she was there. But from a way as he had of carelessly overthrowing her dignity by versatile moods, one could not calculate upon its presence to a certainty, when she was round corners or in little lanes which demanded no repression of animal spirits. Well, to be sure! exclaimed a milkman, regarding her. We should freeze in our beds, if 'twere not for the sun, and, dang me, if she isn't a pretty piece. A man could make a meal between them eyes and chin, eh, hostler? Odd nation, dang my old sights if he couldn't. The speaker, who had been carrying a pair of pails on a yoke, deposited them upon the edge of the pavement in front of the inn, and straightened his back to an excruciating perpendicular. His remarks had been addressed to a rickety person, wearing a waistcoat of that preternatural length from the top to the bottom button which prevails among men who have to do with horses. He was sweeping straws from the carriageway beneath the stone arch that formed a passage to the stables behind. Never mind the cursing and swearing, or somebody who's never out of hearing may clap your name down in his black book, said the hostler, also pausing, and lifting his eyes to the mullioned and transomed windows and molded parapet above him, not to study them as features of ancient architecture, but just to give as healthful a stretch to the eyes as his acquaintance had done to his back. Michael, a old man like you ought to think about other things, and not be looking two ways at your time of life. Pouncing upon young flesh like a carrion crow tis a vile thing in a old man. Tis, and yet tis not, for tis a natural taste, said the milkman, again surveying Ethelberta, who had now paused upon the bridge in full view, to look down the river. Now, if a poor needy feller like myself could only catch her alone, when she's dressed up to the nines for some grand party, and carry her off to some lonely place, sakes, what a pot of jewels and gold things I warrant he'd find about her. 'Twould pay en for his trouble. I don't dispute the picter, but 'tis sly and untimely to think such roguery. Though I've had thoughts like it, 'tis true, about high women, Lord forgive me for't. And that figure of fashion standing there is a widow woman, so I hear? apostrophe apostrophe lady not a penny less than lady. A thing of 21 or thereabouts. Apostrophe apostrophe a widow lady and 21. Tis a backward H for a body who's so forward in her state of life. Apostrophe apostrophe well, be that as 'twill, here's my showings for her age. She was about the figure of 22 or 23 when A got off the carriage last night, tired out why boaming about the country, and 19 this morning when she came downstairs after a sleep round the clock and a clean washed face. So I thought to myself, 21, I thought. Apostrophe apostrophe, and what's the young woman's name, make so bold, hostler? Apostrophe apostrophe, a, and the house were all in a store with her, and the old woman, and their boxes and camp kettles, that they carry to wash in, because hand basins ain't big enough, and I don't know what all, and t'other folk stopping here were no more than dirt than sephered. Apostrophe apostrophe, I suppose they've come out of some noble city a long way here from? Apostrophe apostrophe, and there was her hair up in buckle, as if she'd never seen a clay cold man at all. However, to cut a long story short, all I know besides about them is that the name upon their luggage is Lady Petherwin, and she's the widow of a city gentleman, who was a man of valor in the Lord Mayor's show. Apostrophe apostrophe, who's that chap in the gaiters and pack at his back, come out of the door but now? Apostrophe apostrophe, said the milkman, nodding towards a figure of that description who had just emerged from the inn, and trudged off in the direction taken by the lady now out of sight. Chap in the gaiters? Shock it all, why, the father of that nobleman, that you call chap in the gaiters, used to be hand in glove with half the queen's court. Apostrophe apostrophe, what do you tell, oh? Apostrophe apostrophe, that man's father was one of the mayor and corporation of Sandburn, and was that familiar with men of money, that he'd slap them upon the shoulder as you or I, or any other poor fool with the clerk of the parish. Apostrophe apostrophe, oh, what's my lordling's name, make so bold, then? Apostrophe apostrophe, a, the toppermost class nowadays have left off the use of wheels for the good of their constitutions. So they traipse, and walk for many years up foreign hills, where you can see nothing but snow and fog, till there's no more left to walk up, and if they reach home alive, and ain't got too old and wear out, they walk and see a little of their own parishes. So they tower about with a pack, and a stick and a clean white pocket handkerchief over their hats just as you see he's got on his. He's been staying here a night, and is off now again. Oh man, young man, I think to myself, if your shoulders were bent like a bandy, and your knees bowed out as mine be, till there is not an inch of straight bone or gristle in E.T.H. Waltz-go, doing hard work for play, I believe. Apostrophe apostrophe, true, true, upon my song. Such a pain as I have had in my lines all this day to be sure. Words don't know what shipwreck I suffer in these lines, oh mine, that they do not. And what was this young widow lady's maiden name, then, hostler? Folk have been peeping after her, that's true, but they don't seem to know much about her family. Apostrophe apostrophe, and while I've tended horses 50 years, that other folk might straddle them, here I be now not a penny the better. Oftentimes, when I see so many good things about, I feel inclined to help myself in common justice to my pocket. Work hard and be poor, do nothing and get more. But I draw in the horns of my mind, and think to myself, forbear, John Hostler, forbear. Her maiden name? Faith, I don't know the woman's maiden name, though she said to me, good evening, John. But I had no memory of ever seeing her afore, no more than the dead inside church hatch, where I shall soon be likewise I had not. My naps, I think to myself, more no Tom Fool than Tom Fool knows. Apostrophe apostrophe, more no Tom Fool, what rambling old canticle is it you say, hostler? Apostrophe apostrophe, inquired the milkman, lifting his ear. Let's have it again, a good saying well spit out as a Christmas fire to my withered heart. More no Tom Fool apostrophe than Tom Fool knows, apostrophe said the hostler. Ah, that's the very feeling I feel over and over again, hostler, but not in such gifted language. Tis a thought I've had in me for years, and never could lick into shape. Oh, 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 oh. Splendid. Say it again, hostler, say it again. To hear my own poor notion, that had no name brought into form like, that I wouldn't ha lost it for the world. More no Tom Fool and an H-O-O-O-O. Apostrophe, apostrophe, don't let your sense of witness break out in such uproar, for heaven's sake, or folk will surely think you've been laughing at the lady and gentleman. Well, here's at it again, Knight T. Michael. Apostrophe and the hostler went on with his sweeping. Knight T. Hostler, I must move to, apostrophe said the milkman, shouldering his yoke, and walking off. And there reached the inn in a gradual diminuendo, as he receded up the street, shaking his head convulsively. More no Tom Fool than Tom Fool, oh 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 oh. Apostrophe, apostrophe, the Red Lion, apostrophe as the inner hotel was called, which of late years had become the fashion among tourists, because of the absence from its precincts of all that was fashionable and new, stood near the middle of the town, and formed a corner, where in winter the winds whistled, and assembled their forces previous to plunging helter-skelter along the streets. In summer it was a fresh and pleasant spot, convenient for such quiet characters as sojourned there too. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.